Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio and the Cosmic Citizen. Happy Easter. We have a special show for you today, but first I should mention that joining me are two of my dear co-hosts, Andre Rodatis and Chuck Thurston. Good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Paula. Good morning, Chuck. Good
morning.
Yay.
Good morning, Andre.
Yeah, well, it's Easter weekend, and as the world recognizes that, and so we've invited two very special guests to present to us two special projects that are coming up, both that they're spearheading, essentially. One is the Worldwide Remembrance Supper, which has been spearheaded by Jeanette Reed. And Jeanette is one of the principal people involved with the Christ Experiment and Anointed JW and some other really wonderful efforts to hold up the teachings of the Urantia book. So, and Diane, of course, is Diane LeBrecq. We've had Diane on the show before. In fact, Diane was sitting here next to me the very first episode of The Cosmic Citizen in 2008. Yeah. And, we had just both came back from the conference there. Diane has, for the last several years, spearheaded the effort to celebrate the Jubilee of Jubilees, which is also attached to Easter and the Resurrection. And so, ladies, welcome to the show. It's so good to have you both on. Wonderful.
Hello.
Hello. And,
hi. Hello and welcome.
Hello, hello.
Yes.
Bonjour,
yes.
André. Ça va bien?
Bonjour, Diane. Ça va?
We're going to make Cosmic Citizen French today.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
We are. It's going to be a little bit francophone. Yeah.
Hi, Chuck.
Hey. Hi, Diane. Good morning.
Yeah.
Good morning.
And
hi, Jeanette.
And bonjour, Jeanette. Which is kind of a French name.
Yes.
Oui, oui, c'est vrai.
So I thought I didn't know what to hear me. I had to dial back in.
I did. I saw you drop off and then come back. So hi, Jeanette.
Okay.
And your name is spelled with a Z, Z-S-H-O-N-E-T-T-E. Is that a French spelling?
My father made it up, so I'm told it's both
okay.
Hungarian spelling, but he wanted to make sure people say Jeanette. No, that's
Jeanette.
Jeanette.
Oh, I see. Or Janet.
Jeanette.
No, Jeanette.
Yeah, so he wanted to make sure you had to do the work.
Yeah. Right, right. Well, I love it, and it's affectionately Z. We all love just calling you Z.
Z name is Jeanette.
Z name, yeah. There you go.
Yeah,
it's easy.
So,
yeah.
Maybe you guys can start by telling us a little bit about yourself for the benefit of our guests. And what you're up to right now, and anything you like, what you do for a living, how you found the Arrancher book, just let us know a little bit about you. So, Jeanette, if you want to go first, and then Diane, that'd be great.
Well, I have been reading the book since 98. I found it in 98. I had left my former religious association, which was Jehovah's Witnesses, looking for more information about sonship and about the truth, and I found it in the Arrancher book. I don't want to go through the story of how I found the book, but it was took me about a search for about a year and a half. But when I found it, I was determined to find a way to spread the teachings of the book, and it took me several years to figure out how to do it. But when I did figure it out, I realized, you know, I was recently divorced. I had preteen children and, you know, I was a paralegal. Who's going to listen to me? I'm no one of consequence where people would want to hear what I have to say. So I thought if I go to law school and get a law degree, then they'll say, oh, she's an attorney. We'll listen to her. So I jumped through the hoops and finally made it to law school. Graduated, and the next, you know, the month after I was sworn in, I started my own firm expecting to promote religious freedoms. What came into the door was real estate, and so that was like 15 years ago, so now I just do real estate litigation. But I never forgot my purpose of going to law school, which was to establish some credibility so that people would listen to me if I were to say something spiritual or say something, you know, to change people's view of God or something. I subsequently learned that I didn't need a law degree for that, but I have not where I could, you know, support myself and my family. But I have never forgotten that my purpose of going to law school was to establish a level of credibility to be able to speak and to teach and to show at least what the Arrancher book was teaching about sonship and about God. And that's what I've done. I was fortunate enough to be able to work part-time for many years as an attorney. Since COVID, I've had to rebuild my firm and go full-time, so I haven't had as much time as I used to have. But I had developed with my partner, who is now deceased, he and I started anointedjw.org to first introduce sonship to Jehovah's Witnesses. And what we did is we just used the Bible. We didn't use the Arrancher book. Not directly. We just use scriptures and we explain the scriptures in the way that the Arrancher book explains them or presents them. And it was very effective. We reached a lot of people. Then we started the ministry, faithsonsofgod.org, which was to Christians in general, not just to Jehovah's Witnesses, because we got a lot of visitors to the site, to the AJW site, who were not witnesses, but who loved what we were doing. And then we decided, you know, we would get so many emails like, you guys are incredible, you're brilliant, you know, are you guys humans or angels, you know? And it was very uncomfortable to get that kind of accolades. So we said, we need to just go ahead and tell them that this is from the Arrancher book, you know, so they can go find it for themselves. You know, they say, give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. But if you teach him how to fish, you plant them. So I said, well, let's teach him how to fish. So we started the Christ Experiment, where we kind of gradually open the mind to, spiritual upliftment, we'll say, and
We went through 5 experiments, very well received, and we did our 6th experiment, which was, is there a new revelation? You know, and we showed, using only the Bible, how it is probable that there is, that there would be a new revelation at this time. And when we published that experiment, we were like holding our breath, like, oh my God, what's going to happen? We're going to lose our entire audience when they realize that we've, you know, been using the Urantia book. And to our surprise, the response was incredible. The emails we got were like, you know, I had seen the book before, but, you know, we thought of it as some kind of, you know, new age occult type of a book, and they wouldn't look at it. Others said, you know, they had read the Apocrypha, the Nagamati Library series, and they didn't expect to find anything of any real value, but they were pleasantly surprised, especially with part 4 on Jesus, which is the part we emphasized. And so we, that was a very successful website. And then we said, well, let's do it in the Urantia community, because when we first went to the Urantia community, they were having some litigation issues, and it wasn't as welcoming as we had hoped. So we thought, maybe we'll go and we'll do a ministry in the Urantia community. So we, that's what we did, and we eventually started our school, the Christ Experiment School of Ambassadors, and to teach people how to, you know, readers, how to show Bible readers, or how to introduce Bible readers to the Urantia book. And certain techniques we teach that we believe are very effective with Christians, because these are the same techniques that Jesus used. We just were able to articulate them and show people how to do it. But you can use these same techniques in talking to, you know, our Jewish brothers and sisters, talking to Hindus, talking to any group, talking to scientists, education, politics, your politicians. The same techniques can be used to introduce people to the Urantia book. And then we started a website called AskSeekAndKnock.org, which is a direct introduction to the Urantia book with some articles on why, you know, we don't need to be afraid of the Urantia book, people. Let's just take a look at it. We also developed the Uniting Urantia app that allows readers to connect with other readers near them, because, you know, we're kind of sparse on the planet, but the idea of the app is to help people to find other readers. And we have a couple other things that we're working on that, you know, all designed to introduce sonship, the fatherhood of God, the brotherhood of man, and to just uplift the spiritual conversation around the world. And one of my premier goals is to institute or promote an annual commemoration of the Remembrance Supper, and that's what I want to talk about today.
Yay. Wow. I'm impressed, Jeanette. But I was impressed the moment I went to Anointed JW. And I think I reached out to you guys right away and said, wow, I have never seen anybody that weaves Urantia book truths into gospel teachings, or not gospel, but scriptural, biblical teachings like you guys do. I was just blown away by it, and it's masterful. And I highly recommend it. If anybody wants to get inspired about how to talk to Christians, I think you could get inspired at anointedjw.org. It's really, really wonderful. And then all of your sites after that have been splendid. I know you work with a group in Australia, dear friends, 2 friends in Australia, and you have a team that does a lot of this work with you, and you guys are really efficient, man. You just create some amazing and beautiful stuff.
I should have mentioned that. Yeah, I don't do this alone. I do this with my partners, Don Clementon in Massachusetts and Janet Mandy Wilson in Tasmania, Australia.
Yeah, amazing. Well, 3 people do all of these sites. And just,
4.
Bravo. Great job. Thank you. Thank you so much for everything you do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm always thrilled, you know, because I came up in this movement at a time, and Andre did too, and Chuck did too. All 3 of us started in the 70s, and when nobody was able to do anything, You know, it didn't matter how much of a passion or a fire you had in your heart. You weren't able to do anything. And it was very, very different times. And I think it's, you know, the book tells us that no chicken
you
want to
explain
had without
that,
the shell.
You want to explain why we weren't able to do anything?
Well, I was just doing that. You know, the book says the book says that no chick can be had without the shell, and no shell is of any worth after the chick is hatched. Well, the shell in the Urantia movement's case was pretty darn tough and hard to break through. And I think it was because of the way that the book came and the circumstances of its coming, the time that it came, the fact that Dr. Sadler and Lena and the gang at Urantia Foundation really felt and really did have to protect the book. And they protected it well. Almost too well.
Yeah.
And it was hard for the chick to break free of that shell, but it did. And what has happened since then has been truly amazing. So many things. And of course the internet. And with the internet, and interestingly, the chick breaking out of the shell and the internet happening at the same time, essentially, mm-hmm. everything just exponentially went, wow. It was just, it's beautiful, the opportunities we have now. And so it's always been gratifying to me to see groups like yours and people doing things, because that's what's going to get the word out. And I see the word getting out. I do. I have seen it. And Urantia was, you'd say the Urantia book, and people would say, the what? You know, mm-hmm. what is it? But now, you know, you go to like somewhere like the Parliament of the World's Religions, and they have called us the Urantia tradition. So we went from the what to the Urantia tradition in, you know, it's really gratifying, you know.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I like
that. Yeah.
Wow, we're a tradition.
Cool. We're a tradition.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, I wouldn't have. It is gratifying that to have seen this evolve over a period of time, 48 years for me. So it's actually evolving nicely, I think.
Wow.
And I'm pleased. And of course, Diane, you know,
how
I'm going to turn it over.
How many years did you say, Paula?
48.
How many? 48? Are you?
I think Andre and Chuck are in that neighborhood too. 48.
So just when you were born.
Yeah, I just celebrated my 48th anniversary a couple of weeks ago.
I was blessed to find it at 20.
It's going
to
be your jubilee soon.
Oh boy!
It's been the greatest blessing of my life, besides the birth of my children. I hold it equal with that. I hold it equal because both experiences teach me about God's love in immeasurably effective ways, you know. So that's – but anyway, Diane, go ahead and tell us, you know, I know you came on the scene like gangbusters in 1993, and here's this gorgeous human being who who was asked to be the MC at our international conference, and she was actually doing a television show on the Urantia book at the time, and we were all just so amazed by your obvious talents. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Diane, dear heart.
Okay, I will make it as short and sweet as possible. First of all, I'm very thankful to God and Jesus. When I say God, I mean I include Jesus. When I say Jesus, I include God. They are one, always and forever. And so I am very, very grateful that I was given the opportunity to, so far, as of today, have lived three careers. So everything works in Trinity, and I'm very happy. The first career I had was I went to high fashion design school. I became a high fashion designer, did some collections, trip to the
New York, to all the thing. And I like to say, Jesus, let me spoil myself. I loved it.
Aww.
And it was wonderful. And it was validated to me when I discovered that the three original qualities, divine qualities, are truth, beauty, and goodness. And so beauty and harmony are so important. And that's what I did when I did fashion design. It was a very, very high fashion, very expensive designs, like lots of time and research and quality. And I understood why certain collections are very costly. It's not just a show off. It's all the time, the work, the creativity that goes in that. So I really felt very thankful. And in the late 80s, I felt the inner calling to take a sabbatical. And so, because as I was doing fashion design, I always had this passion of about health, which one day as I was praying, I was inspired with the acronym of HEALTH, which means to me having every aspect of life in total harmony.
Mm.
And I loved that. I said, yes. And so while I was doing fashion design, my mother reminded me, she said, Diane, do you realize every time you're on holiday a couple of months a year, you travel internationally, but never for fashion. You go for health. You need to go meet people, go this and that, you know. And so I also had a career in the naturopathic field, which is an absolute passion today. And from the health of the body, now I work full-time as health of the soul. And so this is great, and this is my spiritual mission and passion. And so on December 14th, 1990, Jesus visited me in my house, and which naturally, like I say to everyone I speak, when Jesus visits you, it is an experience. I don't want to cry. It is an experience that you remember for eternity. And at the time, I did not know the Urantia book. I did not know I was born Christian. I was raised Christian. I was in love with Jesus all my life. When I was a little child, I remember I was taken to heaven. I told my mom, and the only answer I got was, hurry up, come and have your breakfast, because we were 12 in my family. I don't want you to miss your school. Really? You know? So I learned to keep it to myself. And so at the time in 1990, I did not know anything about the Urantia book, had never heard the word Urantia, had never met any Urantia book readers. And so on December the 14th, 1990, when Jesus visited me and revealed to me realities of what is revealed in the Urantia book, it literally changed my life, the course of my life. And I'm just keeping it short because I could speak for days and days. But anyway, all this to say that months after, in 1991, I received the Urantia book. I was driving with a man in his limousine. We were going to a business meeting to go meet one of those celebrities here. And as we were in the limo being driven, he had this book, this brick. And I asked him, I said, what are you reading? He said, he looked up to me and said, oh, you don't know the Urantia book? Marcel Pellerin was his name. And I said, no. The what? Like you said, Paula, the what? You what? Urantia book. Really? And he started to read something. It was in French, the very first translation. International translation. And when he read it, oh my God, it went bang. Oh my God, I know about that. What is this? What is this book? Can I have one? Where can I find it? And he said to me, oh, I buy them by the boxes from Chicago. I have some in my trunk. If you want, I'll give you one when we come back tonight. So when we came back that night, we got out of the car, and I asked him. He asked the driver to open the trunk, took a book, gave it to me, and as I held it, I knew I was holding something divine, something of divine revelation. I went back home. It was midnight 15, like 15 minutes. And I came in the house. I put my hand on the book and I said, God, please guide me what you want me to read in all this. And I just kept tears, rivers of tears were coming down my cheeks. And I knew it was my soul that was just recognizing, and, oh, my God, I had to pull away from the book because I knew it was such a precious book, and it was all wet, and I didn't want to damage that precious book. And so that's how I discovered the Urantia book. And ever since then, Marcel turned out to be the man who was organizing IC93 in Montreal. And so I told him, I said, he said, you know what, I think it was supposed to be in Vancouver, which it was, which it came to be in 99. And I remember I answered to him, oh, my God, I know why. It's because I had to be there. I have to be there with everyone, you know. So all this to say, that's how I started. And so for 6 months before IC 93, I did a weekly television program where I spoke about the Urantia book. And it was just like, that's what it was. I had just received it, and I started to promote the Urantia book. And every week I would have a guest of a reader, because the Urantia book readership in Montreal was very strong at the time. So I invited different readers, and that's how it started. So at IC93, when I was asked to, like you said earlier, Paula, when I was asked to speak there and to give
Master of Ceremonies.
Yes. I said, oh, of course. And so I did. And right after that, I left and we went to Chicago to the Parliament of Religions, which was the first one since 1893 in 100 years. That was the second one. And so I was there, and it was a fabulous experience to promote the Urantia book. And then after this, I went to Boulder and discovered my beautiful Boulder family that I love to pieces. And so I moved there. I came back, left my house, sold my furniture, moved to Boulder. It was just the most beautiful experience. And after that, I came back, lived in Toronto, and then studied there in the naturopathic field and medicine. And then came back to Montreal because this is my biological home. I have three, body, mind, and spirit. So my physical home is here in Montreal where my family is and my son. And Boulder, my mind family, my home of like-minded souls. And then the Holy Land of Jesus, which is my spiritual home as well. And so when I came back, I was inspired to... Jesus inspired me to give birth to the United Urantia family, which we did, and you were there, and Andre was there, and it was an incredible event. So we had readers internationally from different countries. And then after that, Jesus had me started on organizing pilgrimages or trips for Urantia book readers to his holy land. And Chuck, you were there with us. We had this incredible experience with the Melchizedek standing stone. And then after that, it was a jubilee of jubilees, which we started in 2020 when COVID was declared, because we had to cancel the trip that had been organized. And so with the grace of God and the inspiration of our brother Joshua Wilson, Josh and I, we started the Jubilee of Jubilees, celebrating the most important event in the local universe after Jesus made his ascension and was proclaimed sovereign of his local universe. And on his enthronement, it became known as the Jubilee of Jubilees, meaning the celebrations of all celebrations. And I said to Josh, oh, my God, we have to do something about that. And so we did. And this year we're going to have it again on May 18. And hopefully in the near future, we will go to the Holy Land of Jesus and officially inaugurate on planet Urantia the Jubilee of Jubilees in the presence of our angelic sisters and our parents, our divine parents, Michael of Nebadon and Mother Spirit as well. And so it will be an incredible event. And in the meantime, with all those celebrations on Zoom, it's great because we can be from all over the world. And this year I have invited Jeanette, and she will be our guest of honor because we will be offering a long presentation of the remembrance meal. And so it's going to be great. And this is why today, with this great introduction that you did, Jeanette, it's a pleasure, real pleasure to get to know you. And I look forward to May 18 to be together on Zoom for everyone to listen to you and your presentation. Thank you.
Well, Diane, I want to share something real quick because you have always told me since we sat together here in 2008
yes.
and inaugurated the Cosmic Citizen. Diane has said this to me, guys, many times. She said, Paula, you never know who's listening. You never know who's listening. And, you know, I've thought about that so many times, Diane, because the show is available in archive, and we just don't know its reach. We many things that your Rancher Book readers do, you know, we can't judge our success by quantity or how many here. It's
yes.
the quality of listeners. And I just want to share something Gary Tong said on the board about this. And Jeanette, you'll really appreciate this. He said, about this time, 8 years ago, we were out on a Saturday afternoon in London, UK. And Jeanette and Don Clementon were on the CC, Cosmic Citizen. We were in the museum, but I found a quiet corner of the room and listened on my phone. After listening to their wonderful dedication and personal stories, then I prayed once again with huge sincerity that I could somehow find a path to make revelation work all the time. This moment 8 years ago was pivotal to where I am now and what I do now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
You know,
and it's true.
Inspire.
We had the,
yeah.
I was just going to say, we had the same reaction when we saw Gary's work. We cried. Even to this day, whenever we watch that video, Journey to the Universe, we cry. It's just so amazing, and it inspired us long before we started really reaching out in our ministry. It's just it's beautiful. So, I guess, you know, iron sharpens iron. We encourage each other. But that was
yes.
good to hear.
Thank you. It is good to hear. I told him, thanks for sharing that. That's, you know, we need to encourage each other because this is no
yes.
easy job.
mm-hmm.
So,
that's what I call
yeah.
Team Jesus. We are
Jesus.
Team Jesus, like the acronym says, together. Everyone achieves more. I always marvel to see the hand of God moving along with this fifth epochal revelation and putting all his people, the ones he wants to work together as a team, like Gary's work is phenomenal. Your work, Jeanette, Paula, you've been at it since 2008. Andre, Chuck, all of us, we are such a great team how do we say that? The first people that started a new movement, the avant-garde, you know, of the fifth epochal revelation, the Urantia book. And now you look at what the foundation has, all the translations, people from around the world. I know, personally know, that some people, presidents of countries, I won't name who, but people at the Vatican who know about the Urantia book, who are in the know of Cosmic Citizen. We do not know. The act is ours. That's it. The consequences are God's. And so we just let the hand of God move along and do his will. And it's marvelous to see what's happening and the way the transition on the planet, in the universe, from one to the other, from the Bible to the Urantia book, that beautiful transition of the two. And it's marvelous. It's really marvelous for those who have eyes to see.
Acronyms. She told me one that I had never heard before. I wonder if she'd just share it real quickly. The acronym of Jesus, why you must go through Jesus to reach the Father.
Yes, and that is, thank you. I'm really happy that you asked, because it is true. And, you know, every word in the Urantia book has been thought. There's nothing that is a loss. It is there for a reason. And so when Jesus said to his apostles, Thomas had asked a question to Jesus, to which he answered, Thomas, I told you, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man goes to the Father. No man. And when he says man, he means human. No one, no man goes to the Father except through me, which I know is true. All this to say, when he said, I am the way, he was born as baptized as Joshua ben Joseph, but he became known as Jesus. So when he says, I am the way, he says, yeah, you just look. My name, Jesus, is the way. Again, an acronym, J-E-S-U-S. I am the way to God, the goal of destiny. And so my way is Jerusalem first, the capital of the system. Then E, Edentia, the capital of the constellation. Then S, Salvington, the capital of the local, my local universe. And then U, Uversa, the capital of our seventh super universe. And then S, the supreme. God the Supreme, the experiential God. There is the existential God, my Father in paradise, and there is God who experiences himself. And so I am the way. And remember, no man goes to the Father except through me. So I think it's such a beautiful, beautiful way to say that he means what he says, and he is the way, the truth, and the life. And the difficulty that we are going through on this planet now, because we're going through a tremendous biblical change, planetary change, when I looked around, because Jesus put me on intercessory prayer in the past 4 years. I've never prayed like this in my life, 24/7. But all this to say that it is for a reason, and it is really fundamental. And then it occurred to me, after doing all this intercessory prayer, I went, oh, my God, you know, I observe one thing. You look around the world, any continent, any country, there is one word that is on the lips of everyone around the world, and that is people are hungry for the truth, capital T. People want to know the truth at all levels of all spheres. We want to know the truth. So Team Jesus is rising up worldwide. We want to know the truth, and the truth will set us free. And so it is beautiful to see the movement of what is happening, and it's for a reason, because we're going through a tremendous planetary change for the good of all and the glory of God. I'm sorry if I spoke too much, if I took too much time.
No, this show is for you guys. So, bravo. That was wonderful. Thank you. Thanks for asking me that. Isadora said on the board, wow, never thought of Jesus that way. That's true. Yeah. Yeah, that was interesting. Yeah, go ahead, Chuck.
Oh, nothing, just commenting, yeah. That was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So, Diane, since, you know, you're kind of on a roll here, why don't you tell us then about the Jubilee of Jubilees and what you have planned? I know, I just want to say that the Center for Unity is...
Yes.
The ones that have jumped in. Brother Joshua said he couldn't do it this time or probably again, and so you got busy and found someone to co-sponsor it with you, and that is the Center for Unity, and Gabriel Reinberg and the wonderful folks at the Center for Unity, so which is delightful. You met him in Jerusalem.
And it was guided. It was inspired, Paula, because the way it happened is that Josh, as you just mentioned, called me to let me know that this year he could not make it, and we'll see for the future. And as I prayed and asked for what he wanted me to do, first of all, my question was, do you still want us to do the Jubilee of Jubilees? And the answer was yes. What do I do now? Chuck, 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 chuck. And as we know, he's perfect. It works in a perfect way. I got to speak with Rick Lyon, and just as I was speaking with him and all this, you know, then Rick said, "Hey, you know what? It would be. I'd love to do it with you." I said, "Yes. Let me pray on it and see what the answer is." And the answer was, "Yes, yes, yes," with the Center for Unity. And I called him right back 3 minutes after. Rick, guess what? The answer is yes, yes, yes. We're doing it. And look at the name, the Center for Unity with the United Urantia family. Isn't that wonderful? And so it started like that. And so we're going to be co-hosting with Gabriel. And Gabriel, I love Gabriel. He's such a great person. And he also was inspired for his vision of the what is becoming a reality, the Center for Unity. They're a fantastic team on which you are part of, Paula. And Jeanette,
Andre,
I think you are
Jeanette.
Involved. Andre yeah. and myself and all that. So it's not a coincidence. And then just as I was telling that to Rick on the phone, I said, you know, it's not a coincidence. He said, yeah, it's not a coincidence. And we both had the same idea at the same time. That would be great to make a T-shirt. It's not a coincidence. There's no coincidence, you know. And so it's going to be great to do that and to continue this year offering the Jubilee to celebrate together, because on top of having Jeanette as our great guest, there's going to be two beautiful surprises that I will not talk about today, but on May 18th it will be revealed. And also after the event, I will send a thank you gratitude email to everyone for having participated, and on which I will write the name of all the loving service that are offered, so that example Cosmic Citizen, so it will be Cosmic Citizen with Paula, Andre, whoever you want to write, and then the website and then the email address, so that people can reach easily internationally, people of loving service, if they have suggestions, if they have questions, if they want to make an offer to help financially, to donate, whatever. So it's really wonderful to see what's happening, and we look forward to that. It's great.
And this year, it's going to be, it's still the 18th, right? But the 18th is Saturday. Is that correct? May
18th? Yes. Yes, it's Saturday. And what's important to know, again, there's only one book on the whole planet, the entire planet, that reveals to us what truly happened and transpired. And again, thank you, Brother Josh, because it is such a great thing that we are making the world aware of the importance. I mean, there's almost a dozen events that happened that day of Pentecost. I mean, even in the Bible, I was raised Christian, so I know very well about the Bible. And yet at the same time, there's no other place, no other revelation that tells us all the things that happened, the events that happened. We know that the Pentecost was the bestowal of the Spirit of Truth. But as an just one example, who knew that not only is it the bestowal of the Spirit of Truth, but at the same time on Pentecost, there was the universal bestowal of the thought adjusters to all people of same mind of, you know, that is most important to know that the Spirit of the Father and of the Son are there on Pentecost. And so other events like the proclamation of equality between Mother Spirit and Master Michael, who's now sovereign of his local universe, with his co-partner, his equal, eternal mate, and who became the model of what the family should be as well here on Earth. So we're going to be discussing about those events that happened on May 18 of 3080 with Jesus Christ Michael, who appeared for his last time, his 19th appearance, to his apostles and ascended to heaven. And then when he came back as sovereign to Salvington, they celebrated the Jubilee of Jubilees. And the rest is history. So it's great.
So there's a great quote about that. And I don't know, Andre or Chuck, would you guys like to jump in and just explain what happened at the Jubilee of Jubilees in terms of the Mother Spirit and what a big deal it is? I mean, I think that, Diane, what you've done is really bring out, and Joshua too, Brother Joshua too, what a big deal this is. It's for
yes.
the whole universe, not just for us. We were certainly the catalyst, and we're most blessed. But guys, either one.
Chuck,
what,
are you diving
you
in?
Yeah,
or?
Andre. Well, go ahead, Andre.
Okay. So the Jubilee of Jubilees has to do with the fact that after Michael of Nebadon was here as Joshua ben Joseph, and then his 40 days as Jesus of Merontia, basically his soul self, resurrected self for 40 days, of which some of that is recorded in the Bible, but 19 appearances are recorded in the Urantia book. When he left to receive his sovereignty of this local universe of eventually 10 million inhabited worlds. And he left at 7:45 in the morning, evidently went via paradise. Can't imagine the speed. Apparently creator suns are not limited in terms of velocity. Was at the right hand of the Father, was there in the presence of the Universal Father to receive his unconditional sovereignty over the universe of Nebadon for having essentially been seven times in the experience of various forms of his creatures, the last one being here in the lowest of his creatures, us human beings, and here on this planet, what we call planet Earth, but are told is called Urantia. So after that, he went to Salvington and there was received, we can hardly imagine, the celebration on the universe capital, what kind of reception he might have received. And one of his first acts in receiving his sovereignty over the universe of Nebadon was then to effectively elevate his partner, the
the creative mother spirit to equality with him. It isn't that she wasn't equal with him, but this was the first time that that equality was acknowledged. And you can imagine why. Every time that Michael bestowed himself or anything that he does, he is supported by the creative mother spirit, who effectively supports all the mindedness that occurs in the universe of Nebadon. Without her, there would be no creature mind in the creatures of Nebadon. So that's a beginning. He then bestows in partnership with the local universe mother spirit, who supports and sustains and upholds this, the spirit of truth. It is his spirit of truth, something that is, for lack of a better term, we can only imagine is an epitome of his experiential life as it is spiritually adapted to assist all of the people on the planet to better find God according to the path that he illuminated, which is path of unbroken communion and service of one's fellows. And there's more, but I'll stop there for now.
I could read a couple of quotes that are.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, please do.
Andre said, yeah, that was perfect. And to sort of fill in some of the blanks, there's a couple of quotes I'd like to read. This one is where they actually describe the Jubilee of Jubilees, so that seems appropriate to Matthew. This is in paper 33, the paper about the administration of the local universe. And here they say, and this is, I think, really interesting because it's about the relationship of Michael and the Mother Spirit and how they have come to this place now of being fully cooperative and fully engaged equally, but differently. So from the beginning, their relationship has been complemental. And now that's like in full bloom, one might say. Anyway, starting with 33:3-5, they say, upon the completion of the Creator Son's seventh and final creature bestowal, which occurred here on our planet, the uncertainties of periodic isolation terminate for the divine minister, meaning that Michael would no longer be going away on the solo missions, where he would eventually disappear for a period of time, on one of these missions. So they're referring to that as a periodic isolation for the Mother Spirit. So the uncertainties of periodic isolation terminate for the divine minister, meaning he's finished with that period of experience that qualifies him to achieve sovereignty of this local universe. And then they say, and the Son's universe helper, which is the Mother Spirit, becomes forever settled in surety and control. It is at the enthronement of the Creator Son as a Master Son, so a Master Son meaning a Creator Son who has completed all seven creature bestowals. It is at the enthronement of the Creator Son as a Master Son at the Jubilee of Jubilees that the universe spirit, before the assembled hosts, first makes public and universal acknowledgement of subordination to the Son, pledging fidelity and obedience. This event occurred in Nebadon at the time of Michael's return to Salvius after the Urantian bestowal. Never before this momentous occasion did the universe spirit acknowledge subordination to the universe Son, and not until after this voluntary relinquishment of power and authority by the spirit could it be truly truthfully proclaimed of the Son that all power in heaven and on earth has been committed to his hand. So part of what's happening here is that Michael is now regarded as being kind of fully trustworthy, right? So the Mother Spirit can say, okay, you proved yourself. Now I'm going to work together with you in this new way, which they then describe. They say, after this pledge of subordination by the creative Mother Spirit, Michael of Nebadon nobly acknowledged his eternal dependence on his spirit companion, constituting the spirit, the Mother Spirit, co-ruler of his universe domains, and requiring all their children to pledge themselves in loyalty to the spirit as they had done to the Son. So she's kind of moving with him, which is a really interesting thing. There's more about that. But in any case, then they say, and there issued and went forth the final, quote, proclamation of equality. I mean, it's a formal thing, capital P, capital E, the final proclamation of equality. Though he was the sovereign of this local universe, in the world, the fact of the spirits, the Mother Spirits, equality with him in all endowments of personality and attributes of divine character. And this becomes the transcendent pattern for the family organization and government of even the lowly creatures of the worlds of space. This is, in deed and in truth, the high ideal of the family and the human institution of voluntary marriage. The Son and the Spirit, right, we're talking about a master pattern here, becoming fully demonstrated and for us to also see and realize as a pattern for our own relations. And again, we're talking about a complemental relationship here. The Son and the Spirit now preside over the universe, much as the Father and Mother watch over and minister to their family of sons and daughters. It is not altogether out of place to refer to the universe spirit, meaning the Mother Spirit, as the creative companion of the Creator's Son, and to regard the creatures of the realms as their sons and daughters, which would be us. A grand and glorious family, but one of untold responsibilities and endless watch care. The Son initiates the creation of certain of the universe children, while the Spirit is solely responsible for bringing into existence the numerous orders of spirit personalities who minister and serve under the direction and guidance of this self-same Mother Spirit. In the creation of other types of universe personalities, both the Son and Spirit function together. And in no creative act does the one do aught without the counsel and approval of the other. So there's one more short quote that I want to add to this, because what's not really described in that passage is the fact that the Mother Spirit's personality has been emerging in stages. And this goes all the way back to her origin in the Infinite Spirit when Michael came into existence. So they began their existence at the same time, but in very different ways. And when they went out to begin their project of universe creation, the Mother Spirit, well, you have to understand that the Mother Spirit is a third source personality, which is different from first source personality. The first source personality, like Michael or like ourselves, from the moment we come into existence, we're full-blown as a person. Our personality is there. Michael's personality was fully evident, fully existing at the time of his creation. But the Mother Spirits kind of emerge from the Infinite Spirit. They come into an existence in a different way. And their personality, I guess, as I was mentioning, emerges in stages. So there's, you know, milestones in this emergence of her personality. You know, it began with, you know, on Paradise, and then when they began creating the universe, and then when they announced their intention to create life, that was a big deal, and her personality emerged even more. But here, at this point, she finally, well, let me just read this, you know, get a sense of what I mean. Let's see, 34:2-1. So this is in the paper about the Mother Spirit, paper 34, second section, section 2, paragraph 1. They say, having undergone marked personality metamorphosis at the time of life creation, so this was previous stage of her emergence, occurred when they announced their intention to create life. And they refer to this as metamorphosis, that she having undergone marked personality metamorphosis. So that brings up something like a cocoon or a butterfly or a moth, something like that. This is a different, very different process of personality emergence. Anyway, having undergone marked personality metamorphosis at the time of life creation, the divine minister thereafter functions as a person and cooperates in a very personal manner with the Creator Son in the planning and management of the extensive affairs of their local creation. To many universe types of being, even this representation of the Infinite Spirit, now understand here, they're referring to her as a representation of the Infinite Spirit. So this is a little different from Michael. Anyway, to many universe types of being, even this representation of the Infinite Spirit may not appear to be wholly personal during the ages preceding the final Michael bestowal. But subsequent to the elevation of the Creator Son to the sovereign authority of a Master Son, the Creative Mother Spirit becomes so augmented in personal qualities as to be personally recognized by all contacting individuals. So that's a big deal. And that wasn't announced on our plan that had occurred. But I'm sure to the rest of the local universe of their creation, this was a long-awaited and much-anticipated development, because it meant that, okay, now she's like, we can actually, she's kind of fully emerged as a person, as a personality at that point in time. And, it's in parallel with Michael fully emerging as the Master Son, given full sovereignty, fully representing, in a sense, supremacy. He's achieved supremacy of sovereignty. So he becomes...
Before we change subject, I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, before we change subject, I wanted to just comment a little bit on that statement that you highlighted, the proclamation of equality, and bring it down to Urantia for us, because it says that this event was the high ideal for family life on our planet. And I thought about it, how could mortal man use this event as a pattern of behavior? And I noticed that while it does say that the divine minister subordinated herself and relinquished her power to her husband, we must remember that she came to the union with power, with spiritual power. So I think if we were to try to apply this in our personal lives, young women seeking to marry, spiritual power of your own before you engage in marriage, and then when you relinquish power and subordinate yourself to your husband, it isn't so that you become his servant. It's so that your power is now exponentially increased with his power, and then together
you have greater power.
Beautifully said. Yes.
So the proclamation of equality is not to elevate the wife, because she already comes to the situation with power. And if this situation or this event is going to be a pattern for a mortal marriage, the women must come with spiritual power. And that's how this thing works. That's how they're able to equally manage their domain, consult another with it. So I just wanted to highlight that it's not as though a woman is elevated through this event. It's that her power is exponentially when she combines it with her husband's power. And he has to have kind of mind that says, I acknowledge this receipt of this power and I give it back to you, tenfold. So that's the idea. That's how the proclamation of equality has can affect us on the planet.
Right.
That's a beautiful clarification.
It's important.
And what you said, Jeanette, is so true that, you know, when we find out the power of the word, you know, and the word was made flesh. So the word is very, very important. And it's related to our minds. So when we hear people on earth saying, you know, like, oh, behind every great man is a woman, we should say beside every great man is a woman, is a great woman, you know. So great man, great woman next to each other, and not one ahead and the other one behind. But just that power of the word, you know, having said it so many times, and so many times it becomes acquired as being a truth. So women took their role behind, you know, because it was like behind every great man is a great woman. No. Next to
beside
a great man.
Yeah.
And that's beautiful. That's what makes great couples. So it's really nice that you clarified that. Really important.
And very important to remember that the Mother Spirit and all of the universe, including the Father himself, the Heavenly Father, required that our great beloved Creator Son earn that. That had to be earned. It wasn't just given. It
not
had
arbitrary.
To be earned. Right. And when she relinquishes that, it's because it was earned. And I'm sure there was never a doubt in her mind, in her being, Michael wouldn't earn that. But first he did have to earn it. And I think that's very important, too. Trust is a thing that's earned. Power in the universe is a thing that's earned. It's not just given by fiat. It's earned. And it does us well all to remember that. That, you know, on this planet, we can take power over people. The stronger can dominate and whatever else. But real power, universal power, is earned.
It's also important to recognize that earning was not the kind of earning by, say, taking a law exam or something.
Hey, watch it there.
I know, Jeanette. I was very careful about. I knew you were on. You were here, and I knew I'd get a response. but as laudable and as wonderful and as much effort as that takes, what it is the amassing and the proving effectively of having acquired a certain amount of knowledge. It isn't indicating that you've had experience with that. And what was key here is the earning was experiential. He had to literally go through the experience himself of each of his seven creatures in order to actually earn this. And in going through, and we know what he did, based on the revelation telling us, you know, he went through everything that a human being could possibly go through in reaching the heights of what it means to be a human being in partnership with God. He did that here.
Yeah.
What we forget is that he probably did the same thing in each of his other bestowals, that he didn't just...
Right.
Experience what it was like to be that being. He probably experienced it and most likely did, you know, in a superlative way. He experienced the height of what it meant to be a Melchizedek, a Sistan Sovereign, a material son, a seraphim, a third stage spirit, and a constellation level Morantia being. You know, he probably went up from the constellation all the way up to where he had been as a third stage spirit in the same way that he went from mortal experience all the way to the constellation level here. That's imagine that he was able to do that, because we can't, no human being could do that in the same way. Not in the same way that he did it. certainly not in the amount of time that he did it.
Such is the adventure of a descending sun.
Well, you know, yeah, you know what's really interesting about that, I think, is that part of the purpose of his bestowals was for Michael to become knowable. So he became knowable.
Good point.
You know, all these different types of beings, you know, he had a bestowal life among. So finally, with his seventh bestowal, he became knowable to us. Our Creator Son became knowable in a way that he really wasn't before that.
Yes.
And at the same time, when he completed that, then the Mother Spirit also became knowable as a person. You know, they say that, you know, she was, after that, she becomes so augmented in personal qualities as to be personally recognized by all contacting individuals. So, again, there's this parallel development going on where one, you know, is achieving in their way and Michael's achieving in his way, and it creates this complemental dynamic where they both emerge simultaneously to their universe in a new way and become more knowable. I just think that's kind of a wonderful pattern there that's unfolding because they're doing it in a complemental way. You know, like, you know, Michael, you could say, is sort of like, more like the executive or something like that, and the Mother Spirit's more involved with ministry. But you can't have one without the other. You can't have successful, you know, creator activities without a full complement of creative ministry activity because one supports the other and makes the other possible. And that was acknowledged at the Jubilee of Jubilees. And at the same time, they both became knowable to all their children, including us, even if we haven't quite realized it yet. We're still figuring out what that means, you know, how to reach her because she's the third source personality. And they say she's in a class by herself in relation, you know, to beings like us. So we're, you know, now we have the opportunity, though, to begin to explore her nature and really know her. And that's going to change things. But the news, you know, the news that she's now contactable and recognizable is only just sort of getting to these planets like ours that are out on the outskirts of the local universe. You know, just taking a couple thousand years for the news to get here. But for the rest of the local universe, this is like, wow, finally. And that was part of the reason, I think, for the celebration, is they're now both fully knowable. We can... Their children can know their parents.
And well, that is the perfect segue. That is the perfect segue, Chuck, into Jeanette's piece here, because she's going to tell us about the Remembrance Supper. And I just want to point out a couple of things we've said that are very key. Jesus is the Word. He is the representative of the Father. And the Son, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. He is that Word. That is his Spirit of truth, which she poured out for all of us. And it's what makes it possible for when we come together, wherever three or more of us are gathered in his name, he is really there in our midst. That's his Spirit that she poured out, his Spirit of truth. He is the Word of truth in this universe. He is that. And they actually say it. He was truth. He is truth. And his Spirit of truth is poured out because of her, and we can all know the truth when we hear it by recognizing him. So... That's where this wonderful idea, because coming up, we're going to be celebrating Easter as the world celebrates it, but we know as your Rancho Book readers that Good Friday, which we could debate whether it was good or not, was actually the 6th, or that actually the Last Supper was on the 6th of April. The death of Jesus was on the 7th. Time of the tomb on the 8th, resurrection on the 9th of April. So we are coming up on those dates, and in honor and remembrance, Jeanette has put forth, that on the 6th, which was the Last Supper, we all join together as a community worldwide. So, you know, I just want to go ahead and give you that segue, Jeanette, to explain, you know, your wonderful journey with this. And Diane, I think you want to say something too, right, before Jeanette says.
Oh, no, I will after Jeanette.
Okay.
No, I can't wait what you will say. So after, I would love to.
Okay.
Okay, you know, I wanted to, before I start that, I wanted to say that there's so many things that were unrevealed in the Urantia book, so many things we don't know about. And they must have gone through some process in deciding what things to reveal. And I would imagine that the things that were not revealed simply for us to, for our academic understanding of the heavens or the universe, but that we can learn something from it. So whenever we consider these kinds of topics, the Jubilee of Jubilees, Remembrance Supper, or even any other extraplanetary knowledge, if they revealed it to us, there must be a way to apply it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I mentioned what I did about the Proclamation of Equality. We have to learn to look at these events. What is it teaching me on Urantia? How can I apply this knowledge? Because all the things, there's so much more that was unrevealed than it has been revealed. And we've got to figure out what was the significance of revealing what has been revealed, and is there a way that it can enhance my life, my spiritual life on the planet? So I just want to say that. Okay.
Mm, beautiful.
On the Jubilee of Jubilees coming up this May 18th, Diane invited me to, I think toward the end of the program, to talk about the Remembrance Supper. And, of course, as Urantia book readers, we all understand the importance of the Remembrance Supper. Some do it, I think, Diane, you do it every, was it first Friday of every month with
yes.
your group. Some do it, I know a couple that does the Remembrance Supper every week at every study group. Some do it, you know, when they get together for, you know, gatherings or parties. Somehow, sometime during that evening, they will do a Remembrance Supper, our conventions and so forth. So we're clearly recognizing the importance of the event. I am proposing that we do it annually as well. And, you know, it's something unique about Urantians. Our holy days are celebrated annually.
Mm.
And there's reason for that, I think, because of the makeup of the mortal, that when we have something to look forward to, it sort of heightens the appreciation.
Mm.
You know, like we celebrate Christmas, we celebrate Easter, we celebrate, I don't know, Thanksgiving and all these holidays. And if we may eat turkey all throughout the year, you know, we might do that. But there's something special about saying on this day we're going to celebrate this event, and we plan ahead and we say, hey, would you come with me? Come over to my house and we'll have the Christmas dinner, or we'll, you know, and I'm going to be in Aspen for Christmas. You know, we have these plans for the future, and it increases the appreciation for the event when we do these things on an annual basis. And so, like I said, I'm proposing the idea that we do this Remembrance Supper annually on the day of the initial event, which we now know is April 6th, just like we do every other important holiday. And what comes to my mind is that Jesus never asked us to celebrate his birthday. He never asked us to celebrate his resurrection. And there's nothing wrong with doing it. We do it because we want to. Man has chosen to honor these events. He hasn't asked us to do the Jubilee of Jubilees either, but we choose to do that. But what's unique about the Remembrance Supper is he did ask us to do this one. It calls it the only sacrament to associate with his entire life ministry on Urantia. And I think that if he asked us to celebrate something, that one should certainly have the highest place in mm-hmm. our holiday calendar, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to give you this picture. The first Remembrance Supper was an intimate dinner. It says, like, in the upper room of a friend. And we all in the Urantia community celebrate this event in our intimate associations, you know, our gatherings, our local. And if you have ever been to a large wedding feast, you'll notice that there are dozens of individual tables that seat maybe 6 or 8 people. And the people at the table are having dinner together. They're supping together. They're having kind of a communion meal together. And so is every other group of tables. But they are all in this one huge banquet hall celebrating this wedding event together. And so I imagine the planet as a banquet hall. And in our individual tables around the world, in our homes, in our small groups, we are supping with our small group. When we do it together in the same banquet hall on the same night, we are all in a united voice celebrating this, right? So that's what I'm hoping to encourage our community to do, to continue our individual celebrations throughout the year according to our patterns and our behavior, but let's also do something annually, and let's anticipate it so that we can plan ahead. I'm going to fly out to Chicago and do a remembrance supper with this small group over here. I'm going to, you know, have these people over. We're going to do a spread, and we're going to have these. This is, I'm going to cook for this event, or I'm not going to cook. We're just going to have, you know, the bread and the wine, and we're going to do this together. By planning ahead, having an anniversary for this event, we are building up anticipation, and we're building up appreciation. You know, and I'm not saying this has happened, but you know that when you do something so often, it can become rote. And it can kind of lose its specialness if we do something too often. And by adding to our celebration this annual event that is a little bit different because we're now with this huge banquet, planet-wide banquet, honoring Michael, it gives it, I would love to, you know, I sometimes think, what is Michael thinking when he looks down on our planet? And what if he saw everyone honoring him together at one time? I think the illustration, you know, I said in the Urantia book, 10 men lifting together at the same time. We are lifting our voices together at the same time in honor of him. And, you know, we have this unique position as the world across. The universe looks at us in particular. And what an honor it would be for them to, through reflectivity or maybe on the sea of glass, to show what we're doing down here on Urantia. You know, the Jubilee of Jubilees is a universe-wide celebration. The Remembrance Supper is unique to Urantia. We are the only planet that had that experience. And I think if we could give it much more priority in our spiritual lives, that we can promote the kind of unity that we've been longing for. Very hot topic in the community. But if we can unite with our master son all together on the same night, maybe that event will spark unity in other areas. It's certainly a great place to start. And so at the end of the Jubilee of Jubilees, I'm going to have a little part where we'll discuss in more detail the Remembrance Supper, share a Remembrance Supper together, and hopefully whet your appetite to participate in an annual celebration that becomes, over time, a Urantia tradition. This next Sunday, or Saturday, we'll be celebrating the Remembrance Supper for 2024, and we hope that you all will be participating with us. But for 2025, let's make this a start of something new for our community, and let's plan ahead, make our plans for family groups. And for those who don't have family groups or friend groups locally, maybe certain organizations can set up Zoom suppers with small breakout groups. I think the intimacy of small groups is important. Having a Zoom with 500 people or whatever the limit is, participating at once is not the same as having small, intimate discussions about what this particular event means to us. Jesus said, use it, particularly the bread of remembrance was to remember the life he led on the planet, that it was the gift of the Father and the Son, right? It has different meanings to all of us. If we just had one officiate speaking about this remembrance supper, then we're taking on that officiant's view of the meaning of the evening. But if we do it in intimate groups, we share on how what it means to us, how it's affected us. And so that's why I think that even if we do set up Zooms, that they be there be breakout rooms where it's more intimate, where we can really share with one another and with Michael, who will be present at every table, this event.
Beautiful, Jeanette. And if you want to join in, if you can't do it locally, if you don't have a group, and having worked for the fellowship for so many years, I know there's readers out there who don't have another reader within 100 miles, nor do they have a family that's really comfortable with the Rancher Book or with our beliefs or these teachings. So they're isolated. But there are Zoom remembrance suppers going on. And if you go to the Christ Experiment, the website that Jeanette and her friends have created, that's thechristexperiment.org. And on the front page, there's an invitation to a worldwide Zoom event that's happening, and you can join in with our remembrance and wherever you are, which is wonderful. So
I just want to mention that the Center for Unity is the one that's going to be doing a Zoom. Hopefully there'll be breakout rooms, but I think that's on the invitation, and I think it's on, is it on no, it's not here. I thought it might have been on the Cosmic Citizen. But, the Christ Experiment is not going to be doing a Zoom, but the Center for Unity will be. And we're hoping that other groups would, you know, start doing that as well. But certainly for 2025, we're hoping we'll have time, we'll have lead time to plan our, you know, Zooms, plan our get-togethers, plan our meals, and be excited about what we're going to do and make the day that Michael asked us to celebrate the highest. Make that the highest celebration we have in our community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mentioned the Christ Experiment because on the homepage you can find that invitation to the Zoom presented by the Center for Unity. So thanks for pointing that out, Jeanette. And I just want to share one of my favorite quotes about this this whole event, and that is from 179. It's actually from the Last Supper. 179:59, when Jesus had thus established the supper of the remembrance, he said to the 11, and as often as you do this, do it in remembrance of me. And when you do remember me, first look back upon the life, upon my life in the flesh. Recall that I was once with you. And then, by faith, discern that you shall all sometime sup with me in the Father's eternal kingdom. This is the new Passover, which I leave with you. Even the memory of my bestowal life, the word of the eternal truth, and of my love for you, the outpouring of my spirit of truth upon all flesh. So, yeah, he did.
I love the next one. Oh, excuse me, eight.
The one right before it?
Yeah.
Well, let's read that one too. And this mighty occasion took place in the upper chamber of a friend. There was nothing of sacred form or ceremonial consecration about either the supper or the building. The Remembrance Supper was established without ecclesiastical sanction.
Yes. That's why the intimate group is important.
And it also mentions that it's our sacred rendezvous with him.
Yes.
Because he's really there.
I would like to say something because of what you said, Jeanette. And this is actually, just so your listeners know, this is the reason why I was inspired to invite Jeanette this year to close the Jubilee of Jubilee with this special event, the Remembrance Supper, because of when she told me what she was doing and all this, I said to Jeanette, if we can be of any help to help promote it for next year to become an official planetary event, so that through the Jubilee of Jubilees and the different listeners that come in from different countries, they can start to spread it, and we can do that all together. Plus, next weekend, where it will be done in many places. And I would like to say one thing, that we do not tire, because 20 or 25 years ago, Jesus inspired me to do a remembrance supper every first Friday of the month. And I haven't missed a single one ever since then with my study group. And I can say that after 20 or 25 years, Jeanette and everyone, it's always a celebration. It's like the celebration of celebrations. We're having ours next week again. And it's always like this big thing that we get together, and my whole place becomes the house of the Lord, becomes a celebration. After all those years, there is His Spirit is there, so it is something that is really lively. And I loved your example of this planetary big table, you know, big
banquet
room where all the different countries are like the tables, you know. And I have the feeling that right now, right here and right now, Michael is smiling, is rejoicing with Mother Spirit that, hey, look at what our children are doing on Urantia, you know, and another beautiful project taking birth planetary-wise. And it's really wonderful, wonderful to say. And I would also like to add that when Chuck read earlier about Jesus, and you said something about He made Himself knowable. Mm-hmm. And it was so beautiful that you said that, Chuck, because, you know, when you get to love someone, the reason why your children tell you they love you, Paula, or your children, Andre or Chuck or Jeanette or even myself, it's because you know the person. You can then say, oh, I am so in love with so-and-so, my husband, my children, my friends, because we've come to know them. And this is why Jesus said, this is the absolute miracle of blessings, that His final bestowal was on our planet, which became the shrine, the cherry on the cake in the whole local universe, because He made God visible when He said, He who has seen me has seen the Father. And so it's extraordinary that He actually personalized God the Father instead of just remaining this high theory in mind or concept or imagination. He actually bestowed Himself. The Word was made flesh, and the Father and the Son are one. And so then we can get to know Him. And lately I was interviewed and I talked about that. And I was talking about the importance of Easter coming up. So I spoke about Jesus. And then I said, I would like to say that to me, there are three levels to know Jesus. And the first one, again, the Trinity, the first level is to know Jesus. Simply know Jesus. I mean, I'm sure that any one of us who would travel around the planet, if we go somewhere in any country, any continent, and we mention the name Jesus, I would dare to say that most human beings have at least heard about Jesus. They, oh, yeah, okay, I know. Even if it's not Jesus is not part of their religion or their whatever, they know about Jesus. But that is just the first level, just like if we watch television and we hear a certain name, yeah, we hear a name, but it stops there. Then the second level is to know the life and teachings of Jesus. And the best ultimate revelation of the life and teachings of Jesus is the whole part four of the Urantia book, the 50 Apocryphal Revelation of the Urantia book. We know a lot about Jesus from the Bible and the New Testament, but the ultimate one is the 777 pages in 777 papers about the life and teachings of Jesus. It's like I tell my study group, look into your recipe book. Jesus' life and teachings is like a recipe book. You want to know about this problem, this situation, how to deal with this and that? He is the life and teachings recipe book. But then there's another level, because it can stay intellectual. It can remain to be like a theory, you know, a practice, this and that. But then beyond the academic knowledge of the life and teachings of Jesus, you have to, the third level is to become, come to be. I prefer that word than to say to fall, because to fall may have a negative connotation. So to come to be or become in love with Jesus. And the best way to know Jesus is to literally be in love with Jesus, just like when we talk together. And if you and Andre, Paula, say, oh, I love you, talk to you next week. Why do we say to someone, I love you? Because we've come to know them. And to better know them is to love them. And so to be in love with Jesus is very different than just to know about Jesus, and then to even know his life and teachings, whichever size it is one thing. But then to become in love with Jesus makes us grow into this personal relationship, so that when we meet him, when we leave this planet, to welcome him open arms and say yes, you know. And I think it's the work that's being done right now. We are all working toward that goal, and that is extraordinary. And we invite everyone to join us at the Jubilee of Jubilees, because we will have beautiful guests that are involved in loving ministries. And at the same time, we will have you, Jeanette, as our guest for the Remembrance Supper. And it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful, plus next week, all the people that will do their remembrance meal. So it's happening, as they say. It's happening.
It's a happening.
Yes.
Andre, it sounded like a little bit ago you were. Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to just remind our listeners that the Remembrance Supper that will be happening next Saturday will be coming from Israel. It will be 8 o'clock Israeli daylight time. That will be, for us, 11 a.m. Mountain Time. That comes right in the middle of our show. So what we will do, I'm going to recommend, I think, since at least one of us is going to be off anyway, that we just simply postpone, that we cancel next week's show and put an announcement for the, that many of us will be partaking in that worldwide remembrance celebration at that time. And that we will resume regular broadcasting 2 weeks from now. Does that sound good?
Yes, absolutely. I'm so glad you said that. We will defer to the Remembrance Supper, the cognitive and will. And I won't be here. I'll be probably on a plane or in transit, because I'm heading to St. Louis that day, the 6th, and then on to Carbondale, Illinois, for the eclipse. I'm going to be joining Derek Samaras and Sue Haskell and Devon Landis and Larry Geis and several other, Halbert Katz and several other Urantians are going to be there to see the eclipse, but especially because it's auspicious, because it happens on April the 8th, which is the time of the tomb. And so we'll be live streaming from there. But I promise you, Nett, that we will take a moment during all of us together and gather and have a remembrance supper on that day. It's a travel day, but we'll come to a point where we can all kind of just relax, and then we'll have our remembrance supper on that day. And that's the important thing, I think. Not that, you know, we all do it at the same time, but that we do it continuously for 24
right.
hours all over the world.
In
our, in, you know, you have suggested at sundown because that's when he did it. And I think that's important too. So, but it's not as important as just doing it if you can, when you can, with whom you can, in remembrance of our beloved sovereign, the Master Jesus Christ. You know, what could be better than that? And it
beautiful.
Is an honor. Yeah. Whenever you do it, it's an honor to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done it, as you pointed out, Jeanette, with many people in many occasions, at study group, at Christmas time, at conferences, always at Easter, pretty much. Mm-hmm. On Jesus' birthday, we always do a remembrance when we celebrate the Master's birthday on August the 21st. So your Rancho Book readers pretty much love to take that moment, that rendezvous with the Master.
Mm-hmm.
Just what you're saying is, let's do it all together.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, on the same day. Not necessarily at the same time, but on the same day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
and
so
to
beautiful.
Think that around the world, this remembrance meal, if people do it, let's say many people decide to do it around that time that you suggested, Jeanette, then that means because the planet turns, that means it's going to be a long, continuous remembrance supper, which is very beautiful to just envision, you know, in our mind. This consecrated day for the Master in remembrance of him.
Yeah.
And think about this. I don't know the time differential, but Salvington time is probably a lot quicker than us. So it seems that 24 hours, but that might be a quick celebration for them. You know, for
yeah.
the same time.
I don't know that they do it every Urantia year. On Salvington,
no,
I would be surprised.
No, I mean, that one night that we're saying, it's going to be a 24-hour event for Michael.
Yes.
For Michael, it might be about 10 minutes. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's lovely to be out in the same window.
So true. And that this conversation reminded me of another quote that I really love, and it's from the mother's paper. The paper 34 is her paper. It's all about her, but it's interesting, you know, like all papers, certain things come out of the paper that maybe you weren't expecting. And this is one of those things, 34:5:5, it says, though the Spirit of Truth is poured out upon all flesh, this Spirit of the Son is almost wholly limited in function and power by man's personal reception of that which constitutes the sum and substance of the mission of the bestowal Son. Now, just a sideline, I've never found anything like the Urantia book to introduce you to that, the sum and substance of his mission. But then it says the Holy Spirit is partly independent of human attitude and partially conditioned by the decisions and cooperation of the will of man. Nevertheless, the ministry of the Holy Spirit becomes increasingly effective in the sanctification and spiritualization of the inner life of those mortals who the more fully obey the divine leadings. And I just, to me, we were talking about getting to know them. You have to get to know somebody to recognize them.
Yes.
And it's just very important. Divine things must be loved to be known. Like Jesus, like Diane said, love Jesus and know him. And when you know him, his Spirit of Truth will be that much more effective in your life.
You become in love. You cannot not be in love with Jesus once you know him. And the life and teachings of Jesus, if I was a mother again, which I would love to because I love babies, but if I was to be a mother again with a young toddler, that would be the bedtime story, the love story of my child's life at night, to go to bed and just hop in bed together and just teach, read the life and teachings of Jesus with so much love and tenderness and passion that the child, this is what we're going to do at the Jubilee of Jubilee. I'm going to share something really beautiful about that. And it's a love, it's the most beautiful love story. And they, again, the revelators tell us, of all human knowledge, they choose their word. They don't say, well, of most human knowledge, of the average human knowledge. No, of all means all, of all human knowledge, that which is most important, again, the word most important, not just what is quite important, no, that which is most important is to know the life and teachings of Jesus and how he lived it, how he lived his life. So if there was only time to do one reading, because time is going so fast, at least to know the life and teachings of Jesus. And once you discover the true Jesus, who he was, and the very important factors, year by year, at age 1, 2, 3, 13, 21, 30, and so on, you cannot know Jesus and not become or come to be in love with him. And that's when the miracle happens, because then you function in 3D. You don't function just in 2D, because 2D black and white is, it's okay, you know, but it doesn't stop there. We must continue and move into the third dimension, which is to have that love affair that we have between us when we communicate and we write on our email, I send you a big hug and big kiss, you know, whatever, or when we and the conversation, love you and all this, because we've come to know ourselves together. And so we are his family and they are our parents. And what Chuck said was very, very important about Mother Spirit, that she's actually become contactable. So now we have a divine father and a divine mother right here in our whole local universe, and they are representative of divinity on paradise. It's the miracle of life. It is, period.
And
how blessed we are.
What you read, Paul, was so helpful, because one of the things that I'm hoping we accomplish is this community-wide unity and then spread it out to the whole world eventually. But it says here the Spirit of Truth function is limited by our how much we appreciate the bestowal mission. So when we don't appreciate that fourth revelation, that bestowal mission, we have limited access to the Spirit of Truth, and it's the Spirit of Truth that's going to promote the unity for us, and certainly in terms of getting our planet to light and life. So we cannot discount the importance of that fourth revelation, because that's the only way we get full access or greater access to the Spirit of Truth. We can't have it without an appreciation for that fourth revelation.
I agree.
Great.
I think it's paramount importance. Yeah, and I love your analogy of the banquet, because I had a very powerful dream where I was at a banquet, such a beautiful banquet, a table that went on endlessly in either direction, and so well appointed, finest linens and beautiful crystal goblets and silverware and, you know, china dishes. And it was just like, it reminded me of my grandmother used to go all out at Thanksgiving to prepare a table that was just as sumptuous as the feast was, you know. The table was just as, was worthy of the feast. The table was worthy of the feast. And this table was like that. And I was sitting around with all of us were there together. just like when we're at a conference, we were laughing and enjoying each other's company immensely. And Michael came up behind me and hugged me.
Oh, my.
And it was one of the most powerful things I've ever experienced in a dream. I mean, it, like Diane said, it'll be with me eternally. It came as a direct prayer because someone had caused me to doubt myself and my value spiritually. And you know, that should never happen, but it does, you know, in this world. Often, like it's like rock tumbler down here. We're all bumping into each other, knocking each other's edges off. But it was so powerful that, and I, oh, when you said banquet, that's what I saw in my mind, the beautiful banquet, a spiritual banquet. And it reminds me of, you know, Jesus saying, I'll read a quote. This is from paper 159.32. Always, no, it's not, sorry, 166.37. Slowly the apostles and many of the disciples were learning the meaning of Jesus' early declaration. Unless you are born again, born of the Spirit, you cannot enter the kingdom of God. Nevertheless, to all who are honest of heart and sincere in faith, it remains eternally true. Behold, I stand at the door of men's hearts and knock. And if any man will open to me, I will come in and sup with him and will feed him with the bread of life. We shall be one in spirit and purpose, and so shall we ever be brethren in the long and fruitful service of the search for the Paradise Father. And so, whether few or many are able to be saved altogether depends on whether few or many will heed the invitation. I am the door. I am the new and living way. And whosoever wills may enter to embark upon the endless truth search for eternal life. Isn't that a great Easter quote, you guys? I love that one.
Yeah.
You know, as you were reading, Paula?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Do you hear me?
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. I just wanted to say that to important as well is that we did not mention the fact that, like we said, at Pentecost, many things happen, and only the Urantia book reveals to us the many things that happen. And the most important one that I would like to mention is that Jesus Christ, Michael, because if we look at the dimensions, physical, mental, and spiritual, physical, he is Jesus, has been as he yet is. And so mental, the Christ of mind, no, the mind of Christ, I'm sorry, mind of Christ, and then spiritual, creator son, Michael. And so what happened is that at the Pentecost, Michael was proclaimed planetary prince of Urantia. And that is very, very, very important. I just want to read a sentence here in paper 114.11, and it says, subsequent to the downfall of Prince Caligastia, at the time of the Lucifer Rebellion, we know what happened at the Lucifer Rebellion and the upheaval that it created and left us for 200,000 years. We've been in mayhem because of that. So it says, subsequent to the downfall of Prince Caligastia, at the time of the Lucifer Rebellion, Urantia had no sure and settled relationship with the local universe and its administrative divisions until completion of Michael's bestowal in the flesh, when he was proclaimed by the Union of Days planetary prince of Urantia. And that is very, very, very important to mention, because he is now the proclaimed planetary prince of Urantia, even if we have
our resident governor general taking care of the planet, but at least now Michael is officially our planetary prince. And I wanted to mention that because I think it's of most importance.
Wonderful.
Important.
No more prince of darkness. Only a prince of light now.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
I wonder if, while we're reading quotes, if I could read one more.
Sure.
Yes.
There's so much good stuff here. But this is just just one paragraph where Jesus is talking to the apostles about the spirit of truth. You know, he's letting them know that they won't be left alone. And I don't know. I just like the way he says this. There's something beautiful about it. This is in paper 180, section 4. 184.1, where they say that Jesus continued to teach, saying, "When I have gone to the Father, and after he has fully accepted the work I have done for you on earth, and after I have received the final sovereignty of my domain, I shall say to the Father, having left my children alone on earth, it is in accordance with my promise to us, to send them another teacher. And when the Father shall approve, I will pour out the Spirit of truth upon all flesh. Already is my Father's Spirit in your hearts. And when this day shall come, you will also have me with you, even as you now have the Father. This new gift is the Spirit of living truth. The unbelievers will not at first listen to the teachings of this spirit, but the sons of light will all receive him gladly and with a whole heart. And you shall know the spirit when he comes, even as you have known me. And you will receive this gift in your hearts, and he will abide with you." You know, that's like the idea of opening the door. You know, he's going to, come on, move in.
Yes.
He will abide with you. You thus perceive that I'm not going to leave you without help and guidance. I will not leave you desolate. Today, I can be with you only in person. In the times to come, I will be with you and all other men and women who desire my presence, wherever you may be, and with each of you at the same time. Do you not discern that it is better for me to go away, that I leave you in the flesh, so that I may the better and the more fully be with you in the spirit?
Wow. Thanks.
So that's very personal, you know. He said, okay, I'm going to be with all of you at the same time, wherever you are, you know.
And that is why Good Friday is so important. Thank you so much, Chuck, because earlier when it was someone, I think it was you, Paula, or maybe someone else who said, I don't know if it's Good Friday or I'm not sure, that, as you were reading it, to me is why it is called Good Friday, because good. He died. Yes, it looked negative, but it was the greatest gift because then he could come and inhabit and be with each one of us. So it is a Good Friday in the sense that, as he said to the Father, it is finished. His mission on earth was finished as a human being, the incarnation of the Father. But now I'm going to be all over the planet. So before he was only at one place, but now he's with us. So what you read is great because to me it almost like, close the buckle, you know, when you talk about something and you go full circle.
Full circle. Yeah.
Yes, it goes full circle with Good Friday to say thank you, Good Friday.
Well, and with
very
that,
positive.
We're down to less than a minute. And didn't it go by fast, friends? What a wonderful conversation. Thank you from the bottom of my heart, Jeanette and Diane, two incredibly vivacious, gorgeous human beings who are so dedicated. And my hat's off to you both. Thank you for doing what you do. Long may you run.
Thank you.
And
thank you, Diane. Thank you, Jeanette.
And happy Easter.
Thank you,
everyone.
Andre.
Yes,
thank
indeed.
You, Chuck.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paula. We
yes.
love you. We love
You're
you.
Welcome.
We love you.
Love you, too. And God bless
yes.
you. Happy Easter.
Hallelujah.
All right, well, we'll see everyone in 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks.
And
yes.
with that, bye for now.
Bye
right.
for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye,
Thanks
everyone.
Thanks so much, guys.
Mm-hmm. God bless everyone.
Love you all. Great to be with you.
Love you, too.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.